Is it simply the release of the soul from the body? Is the death nothing more or less than this? The separate condition of the body by itself when it is released from the soul, and the separate condition by itself of the soul when it is released from the body.
That was a quote from the Phaedo, in Plato's The Last Days of Socrates, talking about the psyche. We're featuring this word today on this episode of The Afterlife in 8 Words, a podcast written and produced by students at Smith College. Hi, I'm Joyce Kim, and I'm joined by Carolyn Nguyen and Mariam Habib. We're your hosts for this episode. Our podcast investigates the ways in which religious traditions have conceived of an afterlife, or a transformed existence that transcends this mortal life. And we do so in each episode by looking at one word that encapsulates a particular tradition's understanding of the afterlife.
Today we're looking at the afterlife in Plato and Greek religion, and we're doing so through looking at a key word in this tradition, the psyche.
So let's dive right into it. What does psyche mean, or how could it be defined?
The word psyche actually has a number of definitions that have emerged through the centuries. In the standard Greek translation, the psyche was known as psuche. The etymology or root meaning of the word is connected to breath. While the pre-Socratic period defined the word psyche as a non-material copy of the body, Socrates developed the idea beyond what we find in its earliest conceptions. He explained it as something like the inner person, one's intellectual and emotional self.
Then, in the late 5th century Greek tragedy, psyche emerged to characterize one's personality, describing a person to have a weak-minded psyche or a strong-minded psyche. This carried on into the plays of Sophocles and Euripides, showing the psyche to be sighing or lamenting, or pleased and jubilant.
These are all fascinating. I believe that Latin also had their own take on psyche as well. They translated the term into anima. They believed that as long as the human body had anima, the human being is animate. The modern or more common definition in everyday life is the human soul, mind, and spirit. But people mainly use the word soul or spirit as opposed to psyche. It is hard to find in contemporary literature besides in psychology.
Overall, the term is extremely fluid. The term psyche is not always necessarily used for its entirety or full meaning, but it was fluid enough to be applied in various places. Especially due to the weight and connotation that the word carries, it's difficult to translate it directly into soul or even encapsulate it as a fixed concept.
Yes, I agree. However, one thing that remains the same, as the philologist Frederick Saltzman has pointed out, psyche retains the meaning it had for Homer. Its presence in the body means life, its absence, death.
Like you both said, the word varies across different institutions, cultures, and traditions, but the core concept and meaning of it are carried throughout and remain the same. There is no one-size-fits-all definition of the word, though it always bears some relation to the animating breath or life force.
There's also tons of references to the psyche in Greek mythology and literature. This literature is a strong basis for the religious traditions and core beliefs ancient Greeks had on the afterlife and death. For example, Psyche is the Greek goddess of the soul, but she was mortal before becoming a goddess. The idea of a mortal becoming a god or some deity that works in the mortal realm is actually pretty common in Greek mythology.
Another example of this is the Eleusinian Mysteries. This was a celebration of Demeter and Persephone, who both spent time in the mortal realm to manage the earth's fertility. The rituals promised initiates a blessed, fearless afterlife. The transition from mortal body to mortal soul reflects how Demeter and Persephone were mortal gods working on earth in mortal bodies.
The Eleusinian Mysteries also ties into various ritual and spiritual practices associated with the word psyche.
For 2,000 years, people from all over the Greco-Roman world would come for this festival to experience this wellspring of Greek spirituality. Initiates were sworn to secrecy concerning the rituals that took place. For centuries, the mystery rites performed exclusively at Eleusis had tremendous influence on the religious landscape of both Greek and Roman worlds. Carolyn, didn't Plato make a direct reference to the mysteries in the Phaedo?
He wrote, "Our mysteries had a very real meaning. He that has been purified and initiated shall dwell within the gods."
So what do the mysteries have to do with the psyche?
Well, it was said that the initiates of the mysteries stopped fearing death. Sounds like a club I want to join. The rituals were enacted twice a year. The lesser Eleusinia of spring to reflect the time Persephone was allowed to leave the underworld, and the greater Eleusinia of autumn when she was trapped by Hades. The story of Demeter and Persephone symbolized a spiritual death and rebirth. It gave initiates confidence to face a world in which death was omnipresent.
The initiates would even walk the sacred way from Athens to Eleusis, calling out for Persephone as their mother had done. After reaching Eleusis, they would break their fast with a beverage called kaikon, meant to heighten their experience. They would then enter Telestrion, an underground theater where all the secret rituals would take place.
The powerful and bizarre experiences were designed to be conducive to physical ecstasy and subsequently spiritual catharsis.
So these beliefs and traditions are hinting at the ideas we saw in the Phaedo about the psyche, specifically the idea that as in natural cycles, death and rebirth are inherent to nature. This reminds me of the Orphic Lamellae as well. The text inscribed on thin sheets of gold describes what one would say and do in the underworld, because one's existence does not end at death. The soul transcends, so the knowledge and experiences one has in life is taken to the underworld, but nothing else in terms of the body or physical representations of life.
Surviving written fragments actually show a number of beliefs about the afterlife, similar to those in the Orphic mythology. One found in southern Italy from 3rd to 4th BC says, "Now I come as a supplicant to the noble Persephone, that she may be kind and send me to the seats of the pure."
The tablets are part of an Orphic tradition where people were initiated, like in the Eleusinian Mysteries. They were named after the mythical poet Orpheus. Many people buried with these tablets believe that it would help them dispel all fear of death or the afterlife. This coincides with the idea of a consciousness after death, or what you could call an immortal psyche.
These inscriptions range from instructions to drink from the fountain of memory to formulaic expressions with which to present yourself to the guardians of the underworld.
This practice illustrates that the word psyche can be said to symbolize the faith one holds regarding the immortal nature of the soul.
The Eleusinian Mysteries and Orphic traditions are also referenced in the Phaedo, a text that Plato wrote about Socrates' teachings on the psyche. Even though Plato wrote the piece, it's a dramatization of Socrates' last teachings on death and the afterlife, before his own final moments.
Yeah, so in the Phaedo, Socrates challenges his disciples to prove immortality through the psyche. He brings up three core arguments in the psyche: opposites, recollection, and affinity. He also relates the psyche to a philosopher's lifestyle, saying the soul can best reason when it is free of all distraction, such as hearing, sight, or pain, or pleasure of any kind. Much like it is a philosopher's ability to let go of material desires in order to focus on understanding reality as it is.
It's almost like they live their lives imitating death in the sense that they focus on their soul and not their body.
Exactly. The body is seen as temporary, while the soul is immortal, and nurturing it is most important to Socrates. As he says, the belief that the body is but a temporary home of the psyche.
We could also look at the psyche in terms of governing and the Republic in ancient Greece. The Republic is a Platonic dialogue where Plato is kind of recording what Socrates is teaching on the psyche in relation to governing. It was believed that three parts comprise the soul or psyche: Logos, Thymos, and Eros. Logos is symbolized in the head. It relates to reason and rationalization and regulates the other parts of the soul. Thymos is near the chest region, dictating anger and known to be spirited. And Eros is in the stomach, related to desires and appetite. So within the body, the soul is represented in these three parts.
What's interesting is that the term polis, which is a community structure for ancient Greece, is also said to need these three things. If the soul or polis is missing in any one of these three elements, there is no longer balance within them, leading to instability in oneself or society.
Right, and Plato made these connections about governing in the psyche. I believe we talked about Friedrich Sulzmann earlier, but his work relates to our entire talk today. He wrote Plato and the Concepts of the Soul, some historical perspectives about this, where he said Plato correlates this political degeneration with a corruption of the psyche into progressively worse conditions, the ultimate in disorder and malfunctioning being the utterly diseased psyche of the tyrant. Basically, if a city-state is missing rational reasoning, passion, and desires, which also happen to be three fundamental elements of the psyche, the society is in bad condition and unstable. Thus, governing a polis requires these three elements.
That was a great investigation about the psyche, going through all the different yet similar definitions it had, the core ideas within the traditions and rituals it served, and the overall concept of it.
It was a really fascinating time to dive deeper. Psyche has been debated among great philosophers found within Greek mythology to explain the mortal and the immortal, and even used an analogy to argue for the foundations of a polis.
I feel like I have a much deeper understanding of the psyche now. I never knew a single word contained so much meaning or depth to it. Thank you so much for joining in on Psyche to Afterlife in 8 Words with us today. In our next episode, we'll be talking about the Atman in Hindu traditions. That concludes our episode for today. Special thanks to Dan Bennett and Travis Grandy of the Smith Learning Research and Technology team. And thanks to the Andrew Mellon Foundation that supports public-facing student writing at Smith College. Our theme music is Lovers in the Night by Lobo Loco, used under an attribution non-commercial share-alike international license. Tune in next time on the Afterlife in 8 Words.